What's up, folks? This is Mike Biggs. We are tuned into Living in the Now. And man, I am very stoked and just super excited, slightly nervous, but I'm hanging in there as I'm here talking with someone who I have just admired and respected as an artist for an incredibly long time, whose music is very near and dear to my heart. And many folks, you know, in the Bay, in the circle of friends that of musical nerds that I have, and as well as, of course, all over the world. I'm talking about the one and only Estero. Yo, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Hi.
Hey. Very.
What an intro.
Not bad. I will say that was not that bad. Was okay. All that right. Was okay. That was okay. I'm working on my interviewing tactics as I haven't done a ton of interviews ever since I started up this new show on KPFA. But you know, I'm okay at it. So I'm working.
No,
on
I'm
it.
Like I'll take the flowers and run. Thank you. Thank you.
So straight up, first up, I think a lot of folks who are just the fans of you that might not be in the know, like, where, you know, what have you been up to and where have you been since the last time we got a full length from you, which was, of course, Everything is Expensive back in 2012.
Oh, my gosh. You're like, what have you been doing for the last 14 years? Yeah, I mean, I'm here. I'm just about as independent as you can get, right? So, like, I don't have a publicity team. I don't have, like, a whole, you know, it's just me and the homies that will do favors and, you know, live in life. And I'm still writing. I'm still making music. I haven't obviously released, like, a large body of work in a while, but I have done little things here and there. I think in 2018 or 19, I released Baby Steps as a single on vinyl with a B-side called Give Me Some Time. And I kind of did some, made a very strong statement regarding streaming with that as well. And then I released last year, I did a song called It's You Save Me, It's Quiet in the Kingdom to honor Prince. And I had done, I've released like a cover of Stronger Than Pride by Sade. And I think last year as well, I did a collection of 20 songs that were sort of like rarities and B-sides. And it was like from the period of 2000 to 2014. And it was just random. And like I'm a big music nerd and a big music fan. So I did what I would want, you know. So some were fully finished produced songs that didn't make albums, maybe because they didn't fit into the theme of those albums. And some things are just me sitting in front of my piano, like recording on voice memos. So it's kind of like a little bit of everything and random ideas and stuff. And then, of course, last year was the 20th anniversary of the Wicked Little Girls album. And 2023 was the 25th anniversary of Breath from Another. And there was a vinyl for that, and I wanted to do the same thing for Wicked Little Girls for the 20th because there was it was never originally released on vinyl, and so I've been working. That's what I've been doing right now while I quietly, you know, also work on new music that will be coming out. But yeah, this is the current passion project is like celebrating the work of Wicked Little Girls, and so I've done like a very cool double vinyl for it. With like, I'm on the second run right now of it. So I did a run last year, a very small run of 300, super pirate style. And now I'm on the second run, which I'm, yeah, in the middle of doing. And I'm super, I love it. Yeah, it's exciting.
I'm definitely going to talk more about the album too, and its 20th anniversary, and you know, just more details in general. But I do want to ask you. You know, you mentioned being 100% independent. I mean, how has life been? You know, navigating things as a totally independent artist, especially in the current music climate that we are now in.
Yeah, so it's not the easiest thing in the world, but I just feel very, you know, strongly and passionately about how I want to share my music with people. And hopefully I will be building the team too, like as we go, because I am gearing up to do new stuff again. But yeah, as far as like right now and it just being me, I mean, there's pros and cons to it, right? Like I'm the only one doing the work except for when my mom visits and she helps. Like the last run of vinyl, I literally hand stuffed, hand signed, hand mailed, hand packaged, hand labeled every single piece of vinyl, right? And so it's a lot of work, but there's a lot of reward in that too. Like I really love to personalize things, and on the last run of vinyl and on this one as well, I've made it available that you can just buy it as is, or you can opt to get for me to sign it, but also for me to add like your favorite lyric from the album. And so this new run that I'm doing will have printed jackets. The last run I did super, super like pirate style with white jackets and stickers. And so I was hand putting stickers on every single one, and I was hand stuffing them, every like these double vinyls, like every single jacket. And it was a lot of work, but like it was also really fun. And it took me like I thought I was going to be able to do it in 10 days, and I realized like, okay, as a grown adult woman that also has other things to do, right? I could allot about an hour and a half every day to like doing that, and I could get about 16 records done a day. So it took me a couple months to like get them all out. This time I've got jackets. They're going to be pre-stuffed. So all I got to do is open them up and sign them for people and write, love letters inside of them. And then, do the packaging and the mailing. So again, it's a lot of work, but I think there's something really cool about that too. Like I know for me as a music fan, if I knew that like someone I really liked, their music was like physically touching every single thing and like mailing and like putting that work in and like was in contact with the thing that I was buying from them, the physical product, like I would really like that. It would feel really good, So, as long as I'm able to do that, that's what I like to do, And I really do believe in physical products still, and the power of holding something in your hands and owning it, as opposed to streaming where you're just sort of like renting for the moment that you listen to it. I think you should be able to like own the things that you love and attach value to them, right?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of physical media personally. It's like, it's everything is all just convenient at this point when it comes to streaming and just having things on your phone. But like, honestly, nothing really beats like I miss just dearly looking at liner notes and reading every little tidbit of where it was recorded, who did
Same.
this on that, and every little thing that like, you don't get with streaming. It's just little things like that, but also the fact that it's very personal. Coming, the way that you're doing it. And honestly, as a DJ, who doesn't love a white label? So
Right.
white labels keep
Right.
the life stable. We love it.
Yeah, even like when I was a teenager, and living in Toronto, there was this sort of like poster store, record store where you could go buy like signed headshots and records and tapes and bootlegs and stuff like that. And I just loved it. I love having the like rare cool stuff. Like I have like every random bootleg, like single, like everything the Verve ever put out in during the Storm in Heaven era. Like I have all these like CD singles, and like I collected them, and then I still have like on cassette tape like Bjork live in Amsterdam, like a live recording of a live show. I love stuff like that. I think it's cool to own rare little magical things like that.
Yeah, because stuff like B-sides and little extra tidbits that you get on records sometimes really make it. Like the first piece of vinyl I ever personally bought had a B-side, and that's the only reason I bought it with my very own money. It was like 18 years old, and I still have it to this day. In fact, I got it signed, which was kind of lucky and random, but you gotta love that
Can I
whole
ask you a question? Do you still listen to it?
Not as much as I often do. I think at this point, I do have my 1200s set up in the living room, and every once in a while I do break out stuff and just throw things down and drop a quick set. But like, I've been kind of trying not to mess it up too much, although it's a little shredded from being in the garage. But like, I've gotten like a few pieces that are autographed that I do hold on pretty dearly, and a couple of them are sealed up in like picture frames. I probably should have got that one done in a picture frame, but it's like, it's a hip hop 12-inch. It's meant to be gritty, so why not? Oh man. So I was gonna ask about if there were any upsides to like streaming, or if not streaming, the modern way of promoting your current art, because I know Instagram is one of them really weird places where if you're just like on your phone and you're kind of doom scrolling. sometimes you can see the weirdest stuff on there, but then there'll be those diamonds in the rough that are like, whoa, this is kind of incredible. And why is it just sitting here? And then you realize, you know, they're really trying to make it out there and put out music. I mean, streaming aside, are there any upsides to the way you currently would promote new music in this climate?
Oh boy. Like Instagram's always weird because it's like you're fighting, you're like kind of doing this dance with the algorithm. It's like if the algorithm gods deem you worthy that day, they'll show your stuff to your own followers. You know what I mean? It used to be that I could, because I also have an audience on Instagram. I know recently they just did the big purge on Instagram and people lost like hundreds and thousands of followers because they purged like all the bots and stuff like that. And I just on my Instagram had hit like 20,000 followers and I went down the next day to like 19.9 because literally I don't like my whole audience is like really, they're real people. Right. And I built it slowly over like over time. Like there's, I don't really have a lot of bots. Right. So that's the beautiful thing. And the way it used to be was that I could post on Instagram and that was my main sort of way of getting things out. And I would get like a really good response, but now, and I know a lot of like small business, like shop owners have talked about this as well. Like now it's a struggle just getting your own audience to see stuff because Instagram hides it. And then I've also attempted like the, you know, paying for ads, which doesn't work either. So I don't know what the crazy math is, and you can drive yourself mad trying to figure it out. As far as streaming, like, so here's the way I see it. I see it as like a secondary step. So for example, if I want to put out something, I would prefer to do it like direct to my fans. So like say a digital download, I'll put it directly on my website and then go on Instagram or wherever my audience is, like on my mailing list and my Facebook. And I give people a chance to support me that way first. And then once that kind of initial wave is done, then I will put it on streaming. Because the idea is like you cannot expect people to pay for what you're willing to give away for free, right? Mm-hmm. So that's sort of been my motto is like, and we could get, you know, I can talk really passionately about this for a long time and put everybody to sleep. But like, I think the big lie about streaming is the sort of idea of like exposure, right? But it's still pay to play. And also, it's better to have like just 1,000 fans be willing to support what you do than be exposed to like 20,000 people who aren't actually spending their money to like support you, right? Mm-hmm. And supporting art is, unfortunately, it's not a passive thing. Like, if it's a passive thing, then like, you know, this is why we're kind of living in an era where trust fund kids are the only people that can afford to make records. And I don't like living in this space.
Yeah.
And I think you and I got into it earlier when we were having a conversation, but like I'll commence this diatribe about what I think the real issue, the real problem with streaming is, aside from it sort of dipping into the pockets of the creators, right? Like obviously that's a big problem, but the bigger problem is I really believe that it's ruining the relationship between the art and the listener. And I've talked about this in my Instagram, like for example, you know, when I was a teenager, I know this sounds very like when I was your age, but like, you know, before the era of streaming, when I was growing up and in my most influential time of like loving music and being super into it and being really hungry for that stuff, I couldn't afford to buy every CD, every piece of music ever made in all of time ever, right? Like I could, on the weekend, I could go buy one or two CDs. And so I devoured them and they had value to me. And I think that, you know, when, if you don't attach monetary value to something, if something is free, it's essentially like worthless. And so, for example, I am a huge fan of Kendrick Lamar. And a few years ago, I remember like he put out a new video and I went and I watched it one time and I thought, oh my God, like this is brilliant. And then I never watched it again, likely because I didn't have to pay for it and I didn't attach any sort of like monetary value for it. So like anything you don't pay for is inherently worthless. It's not intrinsically worthless, right? But for me, when I'm putting stuff on my website, I'm inviting people to like attach value to what I've done because I do believe it's valuable, even if it's just like $3 for this digital download. I invite you to have a relationship with it where it actually you pay for it and now you own it and it means something to you and you're more likely to listen to it again. Whereas we kind of take for granted, like when we stream, it just sort of becomes background, right? And like, I would also like to think that I'm not the kind of artist that's just making background music, you know, like I'm really filling my guts a lot of the time and like being really vulnerable and trying to make the work as beautiful and as touching and as I'm trying to connect with people, right? Like
Definitely.
I'm really trying to make a connection. Yeah, I'm trying to feel seen and I'm trying to make other people feel seen and feel less alone. That's like that's the deal, right? So
Definitely.
I do feel like we as music fans need to really take a look at how streaming has affected our relationship with the art that we are consuming and how we feel about it. I look at a streaming service as a way to advertise back to myself, right? I think that's how we should be using these platforms.
Also, they probably need more streaming services that actually really pay the artists and that really benefit the artists versus like, you know, if it's Apple or Spotify, I mean, it's just pretty much designed to fatten their pockets and that's it. I mean, you know, like it's just
100%.
That's how it's designed.
This isn't for us. We don't benefit from this, you know. And then again, it's the lie. We're fed the lie of like, but it's exposure. Expose me some groceries. You know what I mean? So I like, again, I'm lucky because I have a history. I've been around for a long time. You know, even the smaller that, you know, the collection of 20 songs that I put out last year, I didn't need to sell. I sold, you know, I think on the first day I sold 40 of them and I made what I would in a single day, what it would have taken me probably a good 2 years to make on streaming.
Yeah, people do not get that when it comes to streaming. Like I think I mentioned to you off air, there was a song by an artist named Casual who was like, you know, a million streams is like $4,000. Or you could press up 100 pieces of vinyl at $40 a pop. What do you think? A million or 100? What's easier to get rid of? Like or to get done? And it's like you make
exactly
the same amount of money. And it's
and as we spoke to, it's going into the hands of the people that really love you and
exactly
like want the medicine, like want to be fed by your art, as opposed to it's being heard, it's being savored, it's being appreciated. It's not just like passive, you know, it's not like a passive experience, right? So I much prefer that. And I feel like I've got proof of concept, especially with this final run, the last one sold out, you know, I did 300 of them. And the goal is to sell 1,000 independently.
Nice.
And so hopefully I can, you know, I do believe I will do that.
And I do want to bring it up to Wicked Little Girls. I do want to talk about the 20th anniversary of it. But, you know, in terms of that album, I mean, when you were crafting music for that album, you know, this was like 6 years after Breath from Another. And I mean, I'm wondering, how did you envision that album was going to sound versus the first? Because after that break, the first piece of music that I remember hearing from you was the We Are in Need of a Musical Revolution. And, you know, it was a prelude.
Right.
It was a prelude to Wicked Little Girls. And right off the bat, it felt different. It just totally hit different. And it was so dope, too. You know, and the song was really
Thank
powerful
you.
As well, especially when you think back of what was happening in the world at 2004. I mean, just so I'm curious,
right.
like where did you think, where did you feel like you wanted to go with that particular album?
And I think for me, I'm like, whenever I walk into a studio or go to sit down and make music, the goal is just to like make something that I think is beautiful and that like pleases me as a fan. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like as a fan of music in general, I'm basically just always trying to create something that like I will be excited about, that I think is dope, you know? And then, and wanting to make sure I have something, I guess, to say. It was a very, that record was made over a fairly long period of time as well, right? Like it was 7 years between records, but I think I started making that record, you know, within 2 years. I started probably in 2000, like making new music and working on stuff. And it was, you know, there had been a lot of drastic changes that I had left. Sony Work Group had fallen apart in the middle of promoting Breath from Another. Our record label just like suddenly didn't exist anymore. It was inherited by Epic and Sony and then asked them to please let me go, right? Like, I didn't want to stay there under those circumstances. And then, you know, finding a new home. I do remember my goal always too was like, I remember giving people references like, I try to make timeless records. I don't ever want someone to listen to my stuff and be like, that's when Dr. Luke was hot, or like, that's when this was hot, or that's, it's very important to me that someone can't pin an era to it, that it stays timeless that way. And I know with that record, I had gone from like being a very staunchly underground kid to then stepping into a place as a woman and as an artist of feeling like I'm ready and willing to reach people on a larger level. But it's very important to me to be like the artists I admire that cross generations. So like for example, like Elvis Costello, like my parents like Elvis Costello and I like Elvis Costello, like Sade. My parents think Sade is cool. Young kids now think Sade is cool. Like that yeah. was sort of, that's always kind of like my, that was, I remember that kind of being the goal with Wicked of like, I just want to make music that, you know, can be like popular, like it's fun, like it's good to listen to, but that it's not corny. Like it's still like a art smuggler. Try to be an art smuggler.